Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a relatively new channel called Deflate. In this video, he attempts to explain why there is no meaning to be found in atheism. I personally have plenty of meaning in my life that actually has nothing to do with religion or lack thereof, so I wonder what angle he's going to take with this. No, I don't. We all know it's going to end up at the heat death of the universe will be a thing, therefore life has no ultimate meaning, as if being able to have a permanent impact on the universe as a whole is the only possible way to measure meaning. So let's go!
I don't know how many times I've come across atheists who say that even though our universe is meaningless, one can still lead a meaningful life.
Right. Because ultimately, if the life we are living now is the only life we get, then the most important thing about your life is how you feel about it and your impact on those around you who are also living their one and only life. And really, this is what gives life value. If you get an unlimited supply of life later, then your limited supply of life now is ultimately without value. But if life is finite, then its value is significantly higher simply by virtue of the fact that scarcity makes things more valuable. Just ask anyone who's been looking for a 30 series graphics card in the last 9 months. Of course, value is not necessarily the same as meaning, but depending on the context, it kinda can be. Maybe the meaning of life is to make your life as valuable as possible. How do you do that? By making other people's lives better. If this is the only life you get, and so it has more value than if it were infinite, then having a good life would be more valuable to you than a bad one. So if someone spends their life trying to enable other people to live better lives themselves, then that person is adding value into the lives of those that they help.
Statements such as these sound nice for sure, but sounding nice is not quite the same thing as making sense.
Couldn't agree more. Christians, in my experience, are really good at coming up with statements that sound nice as long as you don't think about them too much, but they don't make sense as soon as you start applying any amount of critical thinking to them. Statements like God is love, which is completely contradicted by God's behavior in the Bible, up to and including the fact that this loving God sends people to hell, which is excused with another nice-sounding nonsense statement about how people choose hell over God by deciding to not believe in him. Or atheists just want to sin. Everyone believes in God deep down. Etc., etc. There are a plethora of these statements out there.
And since atheists usually take pride in their alleged commitment to rationality, a fishy statement such as, there is no objective meaning to the universe, but you can still create your own meaning, certainly deserves some scrutinizing.
Sure, scrutinize it all you want. But please don't generalize atheists like you seem to be doing here. Yes, some take pride in their rationality, and sometimes this is justified, well, other times it is mostly bluster. But many just don't find your God claim to be credible, and then just go on living their lives normally without giving it much thought, and wouldn't claim to be more rational just because they aren't convinced by your claim. Atheism is not a monolith, and addressing it as though it were will only leave your viewers with misconceptions about what atheism is, which, should they ever engage in dialogue with an atheist, will usually be detrimental to them.
So let's start with a simple observation. Generally speaking, on atheism, the natural world is all there is.
Generally speaking, yes. Not all atheists believe that, but I think most probably do.
Reality is ultimately made up of matter, and everything you see can be broken down into the particles of physics. This, of course, includes you as a human being.
Yes, we are all made of matter and physical particles. This does not take meaning away from our lives, it is just a fact of our lives. Do the words in a book cease to have meaning because they are made of physical particles? No, that is just a fact of their existence. The meaning of the words comes from our interpretation of them. Same thing goes for life. The meaning of your life comes from your interpretation of what you think your meaning should be. And this still applies, even though it is a fact of your existence that you are made of physical particles.
According to atheists, you're just a somewhat more complex arrangement of matter, and thus only slightly different from a brick stone.
That depends very much on the context of the comparison. If we're comparing ourselves to, say, antimatter, then the differences between us and a brick are slight when contrasted with the difference between ourselves and antimatter. But throw a frog into the comparison, and the difference between a human being and a frog are slight when compared to the differences between a human and a brick. Use a cat instead, and the differences between a human and a cat are slight when compared to the differences between a human and a frog. To just say the differences between humans and a brick are slight is weird. Most people would agree that there are large differences there, even atheists. Just because we share the characteristic of being a physical arrangement of particles does not mean the similarities outweigh the differences. That would be like saying that a black cat is only slightly different from a black hole because they both share the characteristic of being black. Okay, maybe not quite that absurd, but the point is you are choosing to compare an arbitrary characteristic in order to say that they are only slightly different, and you are doing so without explaining why that particular characteristic is the one that determines the differences and similarities. This might come as a shock to you, but when talking about how physical things are an arrangement of matter, the specifics of that arrangement are more than a little bit important.
Well, okay, unlike a brick stone, you're at least a living organism made up of cells with the ability to reproduce, but don't ever think that you're somehow special.
Why would we not be special? I mean, the Copernican principle is basically that we aren't special, but again, this is context dependent. If we're looking at the universe as a whole, then yeah, the entirety of the human race will not have a measurable impact on it, and so could be said to not be special. If we look at the entirety of human history, then most individual people will not have a measurable impact on it, and so could be said to not be special. But if we look at individual lives, the people in my life are special to me, and I like to think that I am special to them, and I know I am in at least a few cases. So why does being special in this context have to be meaningless just because we can't also be special when looking at the universe as a whole? That just doesn't follow.
No. Just like the mosquito annoyingly buzzing over your head at night, or the mouse roaming your backyard, you're nothing but a collection of randomly mutated genes and biomolecules which natural selection graciously picked in the course of history.
And why would our biological history take meaning away from our lives as we perceive them? Like, yeah, we evolved. So what? My distant ancestors used to be fish-like creatures living in the ocean. Therefore, my life can't have meaning. I legitimately don't understand this line of reasoning.
And that's because at the bottom layer of reality is just raw matter.
And it doesn't matter that it's just raw matter, because I have experiences, and those experiences have meaning to me, even though it all comes down to matter. Though I would argue that it comes down to raw energy, as matter is basically energy in stasis.
Ever since our purposeless universe inexplicably popped into existence with neither cause nor goal.
Who said it didn't have a cause? I'd agree that it didn't have a goal, but I'm pretty sure it had a cause. I mean, it is actually possible in some cosmological models that the universe did not have a cause, but I feel like this whole thing is irrelevant. Why does the universe as a whole have to have a cause or a goal in order for my life to have meaning? I just don't see how those two things are connected.
What's more, that universe is slowly but steadily running out of energy until it will die the so-called heat death.
And there it is. The heat death of the universe is a thing that will happen. Therefore, your life has no meaning. Again, I fail to see the connection. Even if Christianity is true, there will still be a heat death of the universe. Either that or God will destroy the whole thing before it gets to heat death. But either way, the universe that we live in is temporary. Now, how and why would this have any impact on our lives as we live them right now in the moment? Does me showing parental affection to my kids lack meaning because eventually the universe won't exist as we know it today, therefore I shouldn't bother putting effort into my relationship with my kids? Of course not. This is the only life they will have, and I want them to have as good a life as they possibly can, and will do my best to add as much value to their lives as I can. What happens to the universe in a few trillion years is as meaningless to me now as my life will be to the universe in a few trillion years.
Which will mean that at some time in the future, neither movement nor life will be possible anymore.
Yes. Now, do you plan on tying all this together and explaining why this means that my life is without meaning?
As the universe will return to the randomness, nothingness, and meaninglessness from which it emerged in the first place.
There's a lot wrong with that statement from a cosmological perspective, but this isn't a cosmology video, so I'll just let it slide.
So far, so good. I'm fully with the atheist hypothesis. But now comes the not-so-subtle atheist sleight of hand. Because instead of actually being consistent and affirming that the meaninglessness of the universe necessarily implies the meaninglessness of his or her own existence, the atheist now simply turns around and claims that you can nevertheless create your own subjective meaning.
Sure. Your life means what you want it to mean, even if this meaning is fleeting when compared to the universe as a whole.
You may rally, for example, for some cause of social justice, devote yourself to animal rights, donate to the Richard Dawkins Foundation, or simply enjoy yourself and eat ice cream while sunbathing at the beach.
What you make of your life is up to you. Of course, with the caveat that socioeconomic status will have an impact on your ability to accomplish some of these things. Which is one reason why a lot of atheists that have more socioeconomic advantage will use that advantage to help others. If this is truly the only shot at life that any of us will get, and I have more than I need for myself, why would I not use the excess to help those who do not have what they need? And no, I'm not saying there aren't Christians who do the same thing, but for a Christian, the urgency isn't on making this life better, it's on converting people to their religion in order to give them an eternal afterlife that is better. Which, if actually true, would be a good thing, but unfortunately it doesn't appear to be true, and so Christian charitable organizations often waste vast amounts of resources on evangelizing when they could be helping to meet more immediate and pressing needs. And thinking like that is how you end up with people like Mother Teresa, who funneled enough money into Vatican banks to have built a state-of-the-art hospital in Calcutta, but instead of doing anything useful with that money, she focused on converting her patients, and I use the word patient here very loosely, and convincing them that their suffering was the ultimate form of worship and a way that they could glorify God. And of course, her hypocrisy in this matter is worth noting, as she didn't appear to have any qualms with visiting actual medical facilities herself in order to alleviate her own suffering, but the poor people that she was supposed to be helping needed to suffer for some reason.
Whatever you pick, it will provide you with an island of meaning in the vast ocean of our universe's meaninglessness.
It's a bit of a weird way to put it, but essentially, yes.
As I said in the beginning, while this may sound beautiful, it's not only rationally inconsistent to the highest degree, but also a ridiculous form of self-deception.
Why is it irrational and self-deceptive? I mean, of course, you'd first have to define what you mean by rational before you can call something irrational. Are we talking about normative rationality, where the rationality of a decision is assessed in a utilitarian manner with regards to the expected outcome, meaning that to behave rationally is to always make the choice that has the best overall expected outcome? Or are we talking about descriptive rationality, in which the rationality of an action is measured based on the desired outcome, even if that outcome may not be itself optimal? Pursuing a PhD in an obscure field without many job prospects could be considered normatively irrational, but descriptively rational. And these are by no means the only definitions of rationality. My point is, you can't just label something as irrational and expect that to make your point for you. This is why I don't call religious people irrational, as some atheists are fond of doing, because whether or not adhering to a religion is a rational thing to do depends entirely on your definition of rational, not on the truth of the religion, so it's more than a bit of a red herring. As far as self-deceptive goes, I think the atheists that have actually put thought into it are not deceiving themselves. They know that the universe doesn't ultimately care about them, and so they don't concern themselves with making a detectable splash in the universe as a whole, but in making a difference for themselves, in their own lives, and in the lives of those that surround them. This sort of optimistic nihilism is empowering. It recognizes that life has no intrinsic meaning, and so it gives control of the meaning of life to the individual whose life it is. It's not that life has no intrinsic meaning, therefore I'll lie to myself in the hope that I can convince myself that life does have meaning. It is a recognition of the intrinsic meaninglessness of life, which then leads to the subjectivity of life's meaning that allows us to create our own meaning.
Because if the material universe is all there is, the notion that you can actually create meaning, which is of course an immaterial concept, makes as much sense as to think that you can throw a bucket into a dried up well to pull water from it.
Why? Why does being temporally constrained mean that we can't have meaning in the temporary existence that we have? Why does the ultimate meaninglessness of the universe mean that our lives can't have meaning to us? You know, us, those beings that are experiencing our lives? Why should I concern myself with the heat death of the universe when I won't live long enough to experience it, and neither will any of my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, or anyone that I care about?
In addition, even if you could magically create meaning in a materialistic and objectively meaningless universe,
there's nothing magical about it. That's kind of the whole point.
This subjectively created meaning of yours would be entirely pointless. For if ultimately nothing matters, then whatever you contrive to be your purpose won't matter either at the end of the day.
After I'm dead, maybe not. But as long as I'm not dead, I am still having experiences, and those experiences matter to me. And I can recognize that other people have experiences that matter to them. I'm still not clear as to why the heat death of the universe necessarily takes meaning away from our experiences. This is like saying that putting effort into cooking a nice meal that tastes good and is a pleasant experience is pointless, because you'll get hungry again tomorrow. So what's the point in even eating anything, much less putting effort into it?
Let me illustrate this. Imagine we lived in a world in which healthy food does not exist, but everything we'd take in would cause us to become sick. Now, in such a world, you are of course free to talk about creating for yourself a healthy diet, but that would not change the fact that whatever so-called diet you pick, it will make you sick, just like any other food you could take in.
The problem with your analogy is that the food that exists in this hypothetical reality, which makes you sick, actually has an impact on your experiences in that reality. Well, in real reality, we will not experience the heat death of the universe, but we do experience our experiences now. A more accurate analogy would be like saying there's a universe where all the food that you eat will cause your body to become cancerous after its death, and so you decide to live your life eating the foods that you enjoy without worrying about the cancer that will afflict your dead body after you're done with it. The apologist in this scenario would be a person scoffing at those who enjoy food without worry of this posthumous cancer, because the enjoyment of food in the moment is meaningless, because no matter how much you enjoy the food now, your dead body will get cancer later, when you won't be around to experience it.
In the same way, to say that the universe is ultimately meaningless, but that you can still pick some cute little diet of meaning for yourself, is nothing short of delusional.
Enjoying the food that will cause your body to be cancerous after it's dead is delusional, because the food will harm your body after you're dead and you can't experience it anymore. You see how that doesn't actually work?
By the way, you don't have to take my word for it. Check out Friedrich Nietzsche or Jean-Paul Sartre, who are two of history's most important atheist philosophers.
Yes, you can find philosophers who agree with you. You can also find philosophers who disagree with you, like Bertrand Russell. Appeals to authority in philosophy are always a bit weird to me, because for almost any philosophical position that a philosophical authority could hold, you can find another philosophical authority that holds an opposite position, and that's why philosophy so often degrades into definition fights. What does it mean to be rational? Well, philosophers disagree and can't come to an agreement on the matter, so they split rational into different definitional categories: normative, descriptive, prescriptive, etc. So, I say behavior X is irrational and philosopher Y agrees with me. Well, yes, but philosopher Z, who uses a different definition of rational, disagrees with you on that point. So there. This is not to say that learning to be specific with the definitions of the words we are using doesn't have value, and it's not meant to denigrate philosophy as a whole, but a philosophical consensus is much more waffly than a scientific consensus.
Nietzsche said that once you do away with God, the world will basically turn into something like an abandoned, dark, haunted marketplace where no one wants to be, as it's been completely drained of meaning.
And Thomas Hobbes would disagree. So how do we, as lay people, figure out who is right when great philosophical thinkers disagree on such issues? Do I have to agree with Nietzsche on the subject? No, of course not. But it's not a dichotomy between Nietzsche's views and whichever philosopher you would choose to represent the Christian philosophy of the meaning of life, and there are other options, many, many of them.
He truly lived what he preached, as he spent the last years of his life in a madhouse.
Ha ha. It's so funny to imply that atheists, if they were behaving in the way an atheist ought to behave, should be locked up for their mental illness. It's jabs like that that cause me to not take you seriously as an apologist. I wouldn't take an atheist seriously if they made the statement that religion is a mental illness, so why would I take an apologist seriously when they say basically the same thing about atheism? Not only is this sort of thing insulting to the people that you are trying to insult, but it's even more insulting to the people who actually live with mental illness and are having their condition used as a way to denigrate people.
Similarly, Sartre, in his play No Exit, depicted reality without God, ironically enough, as hell.
No, in his play No Exit, he depicted hell as hell. That was the whole point of the play. The three characters are dead and locked in a room with each other, the eternal torture not being any device, machine, or devil, but in being forced to spend time with each other. This is the play that gave us the phrase, hell is other people.
And affirmed that life was absurd, but that we should just get on with it. Somehow, I guess.
That's a bit of a callous way to put it, but kinda, yeah. The universe will have a heat death, we can't do anything about it, so don't live your life worrying about how futile it is because it won't matter in a few trillion years. Just pay attention to your life as it is now and worry about that. And I'd actually be remiss here if I didn't point out that one of Sartre's most well-known contributions to philosophy was the curse of freedom. There's nothing ultimately controlling our lives, it's just us. So everyone is fully and personally responsible for all of their actions, so do your best to make those actions have a positive impact on your life and the lives of others.
More recently, another atheist philosopher, Loyal Rue, confessed that even though all of reality is utterly meaningless, we cannot actually live this way, as this would lead to something of an existential collapse.
I'm not entirely sure that Loyal Rue should be included in your list of atheist philosophers. The dude writes books promoting what he calls religious naturalism in an attempt to harmonize religion with a naturalistic outlook on life. He's also a professor at Luther College in Iowa, a college run by the Evangelical Lutheran Church, a college whose mission statement includes lines about the liberating power of faith. Now, I couldn't find any information as to whether this college requires the signing of a statement of faith from its faculty, and I can't find anything where Professor Rue explicitly states what religion he is or is not, so it is possible that he is an atheist working at one of the rare religious schools that actually allow professors from other religions other than their school's approved religion, but I'm not just gonna take your word for it that this guy is an atheist when the evidence so far is to the contrary. Now, with reference to the confession that all reality is ultimately meaningless, I think you're referring to this quote, and it's a bit of a lengthy one, so bear with me. There is no promise for the future of the biosphere apart from a story that can inform us about how things really are in the physical world, and which things ultimately matter for sustaining the viability of the natural and social systems. We have no hope, apart from a story that can unite diverse cultures with a vision of their shared natural history, their shared problems, and their common destiny. We shall be doomed unless we embrace a story that can move us to enlarge the scope of our interests and affections to include all humans, all species of life, and the biosphere itself, and no story holds more promise for addressing these needs than the myth of religious naturalism. Now, I've not read his work directly, this is coming from religiousnaturalism.org, where Professor Rue is an author, so I don't know the original context of this quote, but the context that it's presented in is with regards to climate change. Professor Rue seems to be quite vocal about the subject, and sees religious naturalism as a tool that utilizes the human tendency toward religion as a mechanism to initiate the changes that we need to make in order to fight climate change. I may be wrong, maybe you're thinking of another quote, but from what I've gathered about Professor Rue from the limited research that I've done so far, I don't think he would be terribly pleased with your portrayal of him and his positions.
And so he blatantly suggested that we should just deceive ourselves and propagate what he called the noble lie. The noble lie that meaning exists.
Okay, the noble lie line gave me a bit more to use in my Google foo. Loyal Rue is one of the people who is of the opinion that religion is a positive influence on society, and without religion, nihilism must be true. And he agrees that nihilism is true, so maybe you were right about him being an atheist. But then he goes on to say that in order to combat the harm done by accepting nihilism, the propagation of the noble lie of religion will serve to give humanity hope, hence his promotion of religious naturalism, which he seems to see as a religion that is more in tune with science than the Abrahamic faiths, and so can be used to continue providing the hope that comes from those other religions without their anti-scientific baggage. To which I say,
horse hockey.
Even though it really doesn't. So, as I said in the beginning, when atheists talk about creating meaning, they are simply deluding themselves.
And you haven't given any reason as to why that is. You've only said that Nietzsche went mad, which I should probably point out was not due to his philosophy, but was likely either neurosyphilis or a vascular-related illness, which is abbreviated CADASIL, which stands for things that I can't pronounce. You've also misrepresented the setting of Sartre's play, and said this other guy, who may or may not be an atheist, thinks religion is a useful lie. At no point have you demonstrated why a subjective meaning, as determined by the individual, is actually a delusion.
It's probably only a minority who, like Dr. Rue, actually admit that meaning can only be affirmed by an act of straightforward self-deception.
And then you just go right ahead and admit that you aren't even appealing to the philosophical consensus, but are instead cherry-picking the minority opinion. Why'd I bother looking all this stuff up?
But this doesn't change the fact that self-delusion is exactly what's going on here.
The majority of philosophers disagree with me on this philosophical issue, but that doesn't change the fact that I'm right. I mean, like I said earlier, you can find a philosopher to disagree with you on just about any philosophical position, but this amounts to an argument from nuh-uh.
Having said all this, there is one last thing which needs to be mentioned here, which further adds insult to injury. Think about this. If objective meaning doesn't exist, how come the atheist comes to the meaningful conclusion that this is so?
So, our brains are capable of understanding concepts, therefore objective meaning does exist? I mean, I guess if you're willing to predicate the definition of objective on being comprehensible to the human brain, that would mean that objective meaning does exist. But generally, the difference between objective and subjective depends on the subject, in this case humans. For something to be objective, it would have to be the case regardless of the existence of thinking subjective beings. The statement objective meaning does not exist would cease to have meaning if thinking beings were not around to understand it. Ergo, it is not objectively meaningful. I feel like you're mixing up meaning and truth here. Because it is possible that it is an objectively true statement, it's just a feature of the universe that objective meaning does not exist, or rather the universe lacks the feature of objective meaning. If it is a true statement, it will be true regardless of the existence of subjective beings, but that doesn't mean it has meaning without subjective beings.
See, the sentence, "there is no objective meaning to the universe," is itself a statement that claims to carry objective meaning.
No, it really doesn't. Meaning, in my opinion, is inherently subjective. There is no meaning until there is a mind to understand meaning. So the meaning of that sentence is dependent on the existence of minds that are capable of understanding that meaning.
And yet the proposition is that the universe is devoid of such meaning.
Yes, because if the universe is devoid of meaning, then the statement "the universe is devoid of meaning" is a true statement, even if it would not be a meaningful statement without minds that understand it.
Which means that the atheist's denial of objective meaning is nothing but a self-contradiction and therefore complete nonsense.
Nope, that's just you mixing up truth and meaning.
Christianity, on the other hand, can coherently affirm meaning as it postulates a divine mind who has infused the entire universe as well as human existence with meaning and value.
That is a large leap from "I think the universe has meaning" to "it is specifically the version of the Christian God that I believe in that has infused the universe with meaning and value." And Let's say that God did infuse meaning into the universe. What is the meaning? What is God's ultimate meaning for the universe? We don't know. We can't know. God's ways are mysterious, right? Any of the explanations that I've heard either have God being a tyrannical dictator or a severe narcissist. He created humans to worship him, and he was tired of angels who couldn't choose to not worship him, so he gave humans the choice, but he's going to punish for all eternity those that choose not to. Or we're there for his entertainment, with, again, the stipulation that we have to worship him or else. And then if we pass his test and worship him while we're alive on Earth, we get to go live with him for eternity and never stop worshiping him. And that's the meaning of the universe? To worship a narcissist who wants to torture anyone who doesn't want to worship him? I'm sorry, but having no ultimate meaning or purpose sounds vastly superior to being stuck in a cosmic dictatorship where the choices are to suck God's dick eternally or to be tortured eternally.
This is why it's not only the more rational option than atheism, but also the one that is more practically relevant and actually livable.
No, it really isn't. You haven't given any reason to think that it is, you've just asserted it.
Now, does any of what I said prove that atheism is false and that God exists? No. Or does it suggest that all atheists are miserable? No. What it does show, however, is that atheists who hold onto their self-contradictory notion of meaning are rather like castaways who hope to be rescued by catching a deflated life belt.
Except, if I accept your analogy here, the deflated life belt actually exists, and you can make something out of this life belt that might potentially keep you afloat, while you are choosing to ignore this potentially helpful piece of equipment because you don't think it's good enough, in the hopes that there's a rescue boat that's on its way, even though there is zero evidence that anyone who might dispatch such a boat is even aware that you are in trouble. And that's Rue's useful lie. Keep your hopes up that a rescue boat is coming, but take the belt that's right in front of you in the meantime.
Here's the thing. We talk about meaning all the time. And if you're watching this video, you're likely to care about meaning yourself. Now, this intuition of ours that our lives are actually meaningful is fully expected and no surprise on the assumption that Christianity is true.
On the contrary, if Christianity is true, our lives only have meaning as long as we use them to worship God. Everything else is vanity and a striving after wind. If atheism is true, then our lives have whatever meaning we imbue them with, even if that meaning is ultimately short-lived.
However, if we assume atheism to be true, the very fact that we talk about meaning cannot be explained, but it can only be explained away.
You seem to be saying that our brains would only be capable of comprehending meaning if the whole universe has meaning, which is just patently false. I have to be misunderstanding that. There's no way he actually thinks something so absurd, right?
But hey, then again, rational explanations have never been a strength of atheists in the first place, so I guess there's really no surprise to that.
Oh, fuck you. I went into this thinking that you seemed to be one of the more genuine apologists, but quips like this are just pointless insults. Don't be a dick. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Matt M., who says, "There is a bigger problem with the creed. It's the 'and lastly he appeared to me' bit. We know that Paul, the guy who is meant to have written it, only saw a vision of Jesus, not Jesus in the flesh." Yeah, that is a problem with it, which is usually explained away by suggesting that Paul's encounter with Jesus was physical, based on one of the reports of this encounter, including a detail about his companions seeing the light as well, which, of course, brings up another problem. Did his companions see the light but hear nothing? Or did they hear a voice and see nothing? Because the two accounts are opposite. The way that this is usually reconciled is by translating the Greek words voice and hear differently, so that voice is sound in one account, but a voice in the other, and hear is them hearing the voice in one account, but not understanding the sound in the other. So what it breaks down to is that Paul's report of his encounter with Jesus is such that it could easily be interpreted as a vision rather than a physical encounter, and since he does explicitly state in other places that he did not receive the gospel from any human source but from a direct revelation from Jesus, that heavily implies a non-physical encounter. And so this adds to the possibility that even if the Creed in 1 Corinthians 15 is a retelling of actual events, that these events had their basis in hallucination. But I don't agree that this is the bigger problem with the Creed. I feel like this is a secondary issue, as the Creed is, at its core, simply a statement of things that early Christians believed, with no evidence that its contents were based on a real event at all. Thanks for watching, thank you to the anonymous person who purchased the Elgato Keylight for me from my Amazon wishlist, and special thanks as always to my patrons, Mark McManus, Mark Ketchum, Lynn Dobbs, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the ultimate meaning that wouldn't exist without the objective reality of my channel. If you'd like to not actually exist either way, you can join us on Patreon for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my other podcast with my daughter, and my P.O. Box address can also be found there. See you next time! Or cerebral autosomal dominant atriopathy with subcortical infarcts? Cerebral autosomal dominant arteriopathy. Or a cerebral autosomal dominant arteriopathy with subcortical infarcts and or a vascular-related illness, which is abbreviated CADASIL, which stands for things that I can't pronounce.